Good morning, everybody. Happy day after Halloween. I don't know if there's a name for that. Oh, I have to sneeze. Excuse me.
Isn't it All Saints Day?
I don't know. That sounds very Catholic. Well,
in honor of that, let us pray.
I'm not sure who we're praying to.
Hallelujah. Good to see you. Praise Jeebus.
You're amazing.
Sorry.
And I love you.
I love you.
Very much. So we have news. Good news. Exciting news that I think people will appreciate.
Did you say expecting news?
I said exciting news.
I was about to say, whoa, there's going to be a me-shaped hole something. In the wall.
It's not something you should announce on a podcast before talking to me privately. No, absolutely not. Good Lord, could you imagine?
I mean, you have been spending a little bit of extra time with that UPS driver, but... we can cut that part out, right? I'm
just kidding. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I missed the just kidding part of that statement.
Yeah.
Yes, exciting news. Exciting news being we have finally published Learn to Read Sumerian Volume 2. It is in Amazon. I am about to send it to Etsy if you want a signed copy or if you just want to buy it from us and leave Jeff Bezos out of it. And I'm getting the digital version finished now for distribution to all of the various digital platforms.
So awesome. Like, if anybody is curious, Megan did like all of the legwork. I mean, she does all the legwork on all of them, but like this one was a bear.
That is very kind of you to say, and it just took so long. I don't feel guilty because I did the best job I could do, but it's annoying that it took as long as it did.
But I think I think that's our seventh book.
Oh gosh, really?
Yeah, let's see. Sumerian 1, Sumerian 2, Atheist Handbook 1, Atheist Handbook 2, Slavery 1, Slavery 2nd Edition, and the Learning to Pray in a Dead Language.
Oh.
Since 2019, Digital Hammurabi Press has published 7 books.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is pretty cool, actually.
Tis. We drop it like it's hot. I don't know exactly what that means in this context, but...
I'm not sure. I like it, though.
Word up.
Sounds good. Word up. Thank you, Junior Asparagus. No, is that broccoli?
No, you got it, Junior Asparagus.
Yeah.
Word up.
That is...
We're artists.
The Belly Button Song from VeggieTales. Yes. If you're not familiar with it, I had never heard of VeggieTales before Josh and I got together. And it's not surprising that I'd never heard of VeggieTales because it is a weirdly evangelical children's cartoon featuring vegetables. Yes, which is a fascinating concept. But if you kind of remove the weird evangelicalism, it's actually really damn funny.
Belly button.
And there's a song called the Belly Button Song about Mr. Lump? I'm never sure what his name is. Lunt. There we go. Mr. Lunt, who is not a pumpkin. He's some kind of like squash. Not having a belly button.
Is he a gourd?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know exactly what a gourd is.
It's a squash. But it's...
Look at you, Miss Guy Grows Things. So I know everything.
Don't know everything. I just grow a lot of vegetables. But the song is done in the style of Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
Which is damn hilarious.
It is pretty funny.
It's amazing. I love it. Yes, so that's what Josh was quoting, and that's why he went on that miniature tangent, because it's very early, and then tangents is kind of my thing, if we're very honest.
And tangents are very spooky.
You're very spooky.
People are really getting, like, I don't know, I guess I'm like this in regular streams, but still.
Yeah. I feel like you're a little more relaxed than you usually are.
Yeah, maybe. That's true, that's true.
Crazy. Sorry, you can hear me clicking around in the background. It's because I'm trying to get the digital copy of the Sumerian grammar ready to go.
So DC.
You can buy it.
Of the SG.
Yes, all of those things. Well done.
Thank you. Well done. Aw, good job, Josh.
You're very clever. Also, I love you.
I love you. Well, so what's Megan, what's yes. in the second edition? I mean, the second volume. Mm.
So it's a combination of things that we covered in volume one. And we go into more detail with them here.
Mm-hmm.
And things that are new that we have not talked about before. It's very exciting. So I'm waiting for the table of contents to load so I can actually give examples of these things.
So like I'll lay like the broad background. So I think the way that we structured it, because you know the grammar is going to be in three parts. So the first one, you know, we went through like you do with learning any particularly any ancient language, but you know, just here, right here, here's the writing system, here are nouns, you know, here are particles, here are prepositions, here are verbs, you know, here's how sentences go together. It's all, you know, pretty straightforward in that sense. But one of the things that I always hated about learning ancient languages is like when you learned, again, if you're learning English, you don't take like 5-year-old kids, you know, in like kindergarten and say, okay, how do you make a word a plural? How do you put an S on the end? Now let's look at all the counterexamples to this. Right. We're gonna show you ox and oxen. You know, we're gonna show you goose and geese. You don't do that all at once. Right? You say, all right, let's start with the one that's the most common. Right? We'll learn that, and we'll say like, hey, there are other things that you might see, but let's just focus on the most, you know, prevalent, most common forms. And so, like, when you learn Hebrew, there's a hishtafel, right, or a polel, verbal form. I mean, does it show up? Yeah, but I mean, like, not all that often.
It's not the most common way of writing.
Yeah, and so when it shows up, it's like, oh, look at this. Look, a polel form. That's pretty cool. So do you need to learn that at the beginning? No. Like, come on. That's something that, okay, so you've learned these all the other normal verbal forms. Now let's, so that was sort of my idea going into this, was that, hey, let's make it so that we, you know, give them the stuff that shows up routinely in the first book. So, like, yeah, can Shethri have, you know, nuanced meanings in different contexts? Sure. But it normally means to or toward, right? It can create, like, a purpose clause. Yeah, it can do that. But let's just focus on what it normally does, right? So book one is, you know, all the stuff that Shethri normally does. All
yeah,
this
it's
stuff.
The normal, common, regular meanings that you're going to see 98% of the time that you're reading Sumerian.
But what that meant, and then I'll be quiet, but what that meant was in book two, we could essentially follow the same structure as book one. And so like and Megan will talk about it, but like in the nouns chapter or the prepositions chapter, we could be like, here's a quick review section of book one. We learned that prepositions, you know, have these kinds of meanings. Now, here in book two, we told you that there are other ways that Shethri could be used. So we're gonna talk about some of those ways. So in other words, when you come to that chapter, if you've gone through book one, you're like, oh yeah, Shethri, to or toward. Oh, cool, it can have other meanings. In other words, you're not trying to learn this brand new to or toward and memorize that and try to remember that it can have all these other nuanced meanings. You're getting it bit by bit, so I don't know. Hope that makes sense.
It's a lot easier to digest and learn, and because the series as a whole is aimed at people who have never learnt an ancient language before,
yeah,
we didn't want to overwhelm them, especially not in the first book.
That's true.
And the second book isn't, I don't think it's quite as long as the first, but the information is a little more complex, and we have more difficult exercises.
But still very manageable.
It's all stuff that is doable within. It's doable within the framework of the book. You've got all the information you need to do the translations, but they're not necessarily terribly simple.
If I could, just because I was such a nerd. When I started seminary, that I started learning every Semitic language I could get my hands on. And there are lots of, like learn to read whatever books out there. And like the Arabic books that I used to learn modern Arabic, they looked really good and they had really cool looking exercises and stuff, but they were shit. And so I remember I ended up taking an actual course in Arabic and I did really, really well in the course. With what, whenever I had covered in the book and in class, the same material. But if I'd only covered it in the book or I'd only covered it in class, I didn't have a very good teacher either. Anyway, the point is that these books are really intended for you to learn by yourself. And hopefully they're not just frilly, right? That they're intended to be standalone and not have to have somebody give you another explanation or to, yeah, I don't know. I need to finish my coffee.
We both need to finish our caffeinated beverages. But all of that is to say, oh, we forgot the best part. We have a lot of the teaching exercises are drawn instead of as in book one, we didn't write them all ourselves. We wrote a lot of them, but a lot of them are also drawn from different Sumerian literary texts. So there are little sections of 2-3 lines from different myths. And the second half of the book is using the Curse of Agadeh.
It's such a cool story.
You should tell them about the Curse of Agadeh because it's a really good story, but it's a great great text to be learning with as well.
So to preface it, we sent the book to a good friend of ours, Jeremiah Peterson, who's a really amazing Sumerologist. And said, like, tear this thing up, right? Like, point out all the flaws. And he wrote back and said, I've never seen such a genius. No, he didn't, right? But anyway, just kidding. But he said, I really like that you use the Curse of Agadeh. So that made me feel good. But the Curse of Agadez is a story. So Naram-Sin is a king of the Sargonic Empire in the second half of the second millennium. And he's got this weird history where when he was alive, he was deified. And like,
Which is really weird in Mesopotamia. It just it doesn't happen. There are two, there's probably more than two, but two kings spring to mind. It's not like Egypt where every single king is considered divine.
But so like in his lifetime, he was seemingly pretty dope, right? But then afterwards, he became
I'm
vilified.
sorry, did you just describe Naram-Sin as pretty dope?
Pretty dope.
That's
PD,
fantastic. I
you
like
know?
that. I like that.
You
That
know
needs to be in the
how
pictures.
we do. I'm such a dork. Anyway, so there are these literary texts that sort of portray Naram-Sin as the guy that does it wrong. And in this, very, very famous, and you've probably seen it on like Saturday Night Live, you know, that famous. Just kidding. Naram-Sin wants to. I won't go through the whole story, but he wants to do something, and so he. Anyway, the gods. Sorry, I won't go through that. But the gods reveal that it gets revealed to him that he's gonna lose his kingship, and it's shit's bad. He ends up like rebelling against the message from the gods, like destroys the Angkor temple, like takes I mean it goes into he takes all these weapons and like hacks that apart, and it's a big deal. But anyway, it's one of these. It's so Agadez, Akkad, city of Akkad. Just it goes awry. I won't spoil it for everybody, but it's a cool story. And you can go to the electronic text corpus of Sumerian literature, which, as I always say, boy, they named that well. Just kidding. It's terrible, terrible name. The electronic
Look,
text corpus
no,
of Sumerian
look.
literature.
Mesopotamia, Assyriologists are fantastic at naming resources,
That's
okay?
right. Yeah.
ETCSL, ETSRI, ORAC, I mean, they just
Yeah,
roll
the
off the tongue.
cuneiform digital
Library,
library in
the DLI.
initiative. Come on, guys, like let's come up with something cooler. Like digital Hammurabi. That's some dope ass shit. Some DAS, you know? Okay.
We're not shortening that to DAS.
Okay, fine.
Sorry, it's just no. I refuse.
Yeah, if you go to ETCSL, if you just search on ETCSL Sumerian, it'll bring it up. You could probably type in that and then Curse of Agadez, Agade, and then you can read it in English, the whole thing. But yeah, I'll be quiet. You're up, slugger.
You're silly. But we don't have an awful lot of news besides that. It's been, I've just been trying to get this edited and done and out, and now it's done. I feel much better, and I will be continuing work on the German translation of Volume 1, which no one is
What about
clamoring
the
for, but.
Arabic?
So I'm not doing that. Ahmed's doing that.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
People aren't
Oh, but
exactly
we
clamoring.
sh Sorry.
Yep. No, you're good.
We should also announce that yesterday we solidified that someone named Megan Lewis will be joining someone named Joshua Bowen. That's us. At BahaCon 2024
Oh, yeah.
in Sarnia, Ontario,
It's going to be
we
fun.
will be doing a joint presentation on violence and genocide
Very
in
exciting.
the Old Testament. And Megan will be presenting data from the wider ancient Near East, particularly Middle Assyrian and Neo-Assyrian sources on violence and genocide. And I will be talking about the Old Testament stuff and how Christian apologists try to explain away such difficulties by saying, oh no, 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 there's good reasons why God commanded everybody to, it was just hyperbole. Right, Meg? It was just hyperbole.
He was, yeah, absolutely.
They didn't kill everyone.
But the Neo-Assyrians definitely did. So.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, they did that. So that should be fun. So join us. I think it's August 26, 27, somewhere around there, that weekend.
I don't remember, it's the August, though.
Yeah.
The announcement should be online.
But if
it'll be fun.
If people are concerned about that word Canada, like oh my gosh, I live in the U.S. and that's so far away. It's actually just right across the border. So we're in Maryland, and it's like, I guess 10 hours to drive it. So that's not, it's not too bad. But it really is like right across the border. You can see the border from the hotel. Because I know that as an American, I get really nervous anytime I leave the country. You know, so Megan, I know you feel that way too.
Yes. Not so much, actually.
I think you're nervous every time you're in here. Yeah. Sick flex, bruh. I have to tell that story. Doesn't really have anything to do with, you know, the channel or anything, but Oliver, our 5-year-old, was sitting at the counter, which we have recently cleared, which is great.
There is nothing on it. Which, if you have small children and a kitchen counter, you know, that's not a mean feat. That's not easy to do.
Yeah, it is the dumping ground of the house.
And it's remained clear for a whole 48 hours.
Yeah.
I'm pleased.
That's kooky talk. But Oliver was sitting there, and we got this little, like a little toy catalog or something in the mail from Target. And he's just been flipping through it incessantly. And he'll sit there, and every time he comes up to a new toy, you'll hear him go, oh my God, what the flip? Bruh.
Occasionally it is actually what the fuck. Which is a little disconcerting as a parent.
Yeah. And sometimes it's what the fucking flip. Which,
which I quite enjoy on a comical level.
Yeah. But also, Oliver, don't say that. You're not old enough. But the fact that he goes, bruh. Oliver, do you realize that, do you know what that is? No, he's just seen it on YouTube or something. So, but, oh, bruh. Anyway, I thought that was funny. What else? I don't know if anybody's mentioned, I haven't looked on the comments or anything of the last video on Patreon that we put up, but I don't know if anybody volunteered or said anything about hosting Discord, the Discord thing, but that's still an option if people want me to do that. Again, if it's not of interest, I do go into that. Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say I might put it in
a Twitter.
No, in our community tab. And just see if there's anyone interested in kind of not necessarily running it, but participating. Because if there's no interest in participation, then I won't worry about finding someone to run it.
Right. Yeah, that's smart. I think the big thing for me is I struggle. I just struggle with running them, because there's a lot of pressure for some reason in my brain on even in this. If I had to run this, I probably wouldn't want to do it, because like steering it and then ending it, and particularly if there are other people in there that can talk to me, I am terrible about saying I have to go now. I'm terrible at that. So, having somebody like if Skylar would run it, that would be brilliant. Because Skylar would just be like, "We're done." And I'd be like, "No, it's okay." And he'd say, "No, you're. This is the end.
You're finished, Josh. This
You are
is.
not allowed to answer any more questions."
Well done.
By the way, there's a guy, I cannot remember his name for the life of me, like his actual name, but his screen name is, I don't know if it's unforgettable, but it's stuck in my brain. It's all caps, The Preacher. And he's this like, I don't know, maybe late 20s. Very loud. Can I say obnoxious?
Yes.
He's obnoxious.
If you find him obnoxious, you can say it.
But he's also got this unique, at least in Christianity, view of the text. His main message is, if you so when Paul talks about like, or when you read in First John, or essentially like those that continue in sin, or those that sin are of their father, the devil. So essentially, like if you sin, you're not saved. Well, I mean, there are a couple different contexts in which that shows up. Paul usually seems to be referring to that more in a positional sense, like those that have the righteousness of Christ, like the when the when God sees them, they're not seen as sinners. Anyway, it's like a positional thing more than a sanctification thing. But anyway, so that's his position. Like, so he'll like smoke on camera, he'll drink on camera, he'll use all kinds of profanity on camera, he'll talk about like bad stuff that he does, whatever, stereotypically, like Christian, from a Christian standpoint. But then he'll say it's not sin to me, because I can't sin because I'm perfect.
That's an
And when he,
interesting.
like, what he means by that is, like, I'm perfect in God's eyes because I'm justified.
So there's no way for me to sin.
Yeah. So none of the stuff that I do is sin.
That's
So,
interesting.
anyway, I say I was in Rebecca's, Bread of Life. I was in the side chat of her stream yesterday. And it was a really neat stream, because she was talking about members of the LGBTQ community that came to this conference, and she was just really moved by a lot of the things that they were saying. It was really, really like queer affirming stream. I really enjoyed it. And but he's in the side chat, I mean, just spamming it with all these verses. And I wrote, like golly or something. The preacher. And he like instantly remembered me and was like, "We need to have a debate."
No,
And
thank you.
I was like, "What on earth would you and I debate?" And he said, "The truth."
What?
And I was like, what does that mean to debate the truth? And he said, well, we should debate the truth. And I said, I don't think I'm any closer to understanding what you mean.
You've given me precisely zero more information. Zero more. No more information than I started out with.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. But anyway.
Bizarre. Well,
it's
we should probably call it a day. Thank
fine,
you.
fine.
Well, you have work. I have to
That's true, that's true.
get the kids ready for school. But the takeaways from this are Sumerian Grammar Volume 2 is now up and available. And by the end of the day, it will be up on Etsy also. And I'm going to BahaCon. Hooray!
Hooray!
Thank you all for listening.
Zoidberg.
Thank you, Zoidberg. And we will see you next week.
I love you.
I love you too.